Welcome to another edition of Mormonland. I'm managing editor Dave Noyce, and I will oversee our faith coverage. I'm joined again by senior religion reporter Peggy Fletcher-Stack. Hello, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints expressly forbids polygamy and has done so for more than a century. But plural marriage remains very much a part of its theology. It's enshrined in its scripture and practiced at least through so-called temple ceilings in its temples. Add to that the chatter about polygamy possibly being legalized, and the question becomes, what if the church reinstituted plural marriage? Melissa Leilani Larson, who wrote the screenplays for the movies Jane and Emma and Freetown, explored that notion in her play, Pilot Program. She joins us today to discuss that play and the subject of polygamy. Melissa, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, for starters, Melissa, tell us, what did you know about Mormon polygamy when you were growing up? In Hawaii, right?
Yes. Virtually nothing. It wasn't something that we talked about, you know, in Sunday school or primary. It's not something that was
You were raised
discussed.
In the church.
I was, yes. But it just isn't, it's not typical dinner table conversation or typical Sunday school or seminary conversation. I think I knew it was happening. And when I say, I think I was aware of it historically somewhere in high school. And it was kind of on the fringe, though. It seemed very distant because the beginnings of the church felt very far away from me. but it wasn't really something I sat down and studied and considered probably until college.
What did you think about it?
I just thought it was strange. I also thought it seemed like it had been pretty important. And I do remember wondering, and I still wonder why we don't talk about it, considering its impact on our history and on our culture, but we just seem to, it's as if when the church left it behind at the turn of the 20th century that they just left it completely behind.
That's especially interesting because so many outsiders do talk about it. That
yes.
might be what they know about the church sometimes.
Well, I think I was attracted to it, started to pay more attention to it because it was so strange. It felt out of the ordinary, and I think that people who don't know Mormons very well, they kind of glom onto it and go, well, this is interesting and weird, and then it's what stays. I mean, I don't know that we can be surprised by that or even offended by it if that's the thing that people remember, because it is out of the ordinary.
So you didn't have any family members who had any experience with this, or...
We do, but I only recently discovered that. My mother is from the Philippines, and she joined the church and came to the Church College of Hawaii to go to school, and that's where she met my dad. My dad is a lifelong member of the church, and he has pioneer heritage on his mother's side that I recently discovered, a husband with two wives that were both sisters. But it's just, no one really denied it, but then also no one really talked about it. No one went out of their way to say, oh, hey, we have that in our family. But I don't know that anyone was upset about it. I think, it was just there. It was there for me to discover and for me to freak out about a little.
So tell us a little bit about Pilot Program, its premise, a little bit about its plot.
Sure. Pilot Program was a bit of a thought of experiment. That's where it started. I was curious. I was as a LDS woman in her 30s at the time that I first considered writing the story. Now I'm in my 40s. But it was, polygamy has been this kind of unspoken thing in the room where I've had really odd, trying to be comforting conversations with people where, you know, someone has mentioned, oh, it's going to be all right that you're not married now because you can be married to someone else in the hereafter, probably as a second or a third wife. And I go, how is that supposed to make me feel better? And also, what a strange thing to say to somebody. It's always just kind of, as a single person in a culture that's so focused on marriage, polygamy feels like this really weird thing that I'm supposed to be grateful for and also supposed to be, you know, I think I'm more keenly aware of it because of my situation as an unmarried person. And so Pilot Program was, it grew out of this idea of what happens if the church were to bring polygamy back. And it explores the story of a couple. They are, on purpose, very liberal, a professor and her husband who works in PR, and they have tried unsuccessfully to have children. And they are called to be part of a pilot program in which polygamy is reinstated in Salt Lake City. And when I first wrote the draft of the play in 2013, polygamy was, there was a discussion of it being decriminalized because of the family featured in the show Sister Wives. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I kind of first had this idea, oh, what happens if it's decriminalized, if it's legalized, if the church brings it back, will I be expected to marry someone who's already married? All those questions were swirling, and I first wrote the play. And I first intended for it to be from the perspective of a single woman coming into this marriage. But as I started writing the play, it became more about Abigail. The protagonist is the first wife in this scenario.
Married to Jacob?
Yes, Abigail mm-hmm. and Jacob. Mm-hmm. And it's about them receiving this call and accepting the call and then bringing second wife Heather into their relationship.
And how does it change them?
Well, they, I see the play as being, as covering two trajectories. The first is that Heather goes from being single to being married, and that Abigail goes from being married to being single. That they both are in the marriage, but Abigail's fear going into it is that she'll be replaced, and she is, but then at the same time, she is all right with that, kind of taking a back seat in her marriage, because it is very different than it was when she and Jacob, who are very happily married at the start of the play, except for their desire to have children. Their marriage is just never the same again because it's not just theirs. They've opened it up to a third person.
And we don't want to give away too much, of course, in case people see it sometime, but Heather does end up having a child?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you say it was a purpose to make them liberal. Why that choice? What do you think that introduced that made the play better for your purposes?
I consider myself a liberal Mormon, and at least as far as politics go. And I think that sometimes when we portray people of faith in drama or in film, we have a tendency to assume things about that person. And as a liberal person who believes very strongly in my faith, and my faith is a big part of who I am, and I think drives some of my leanings politically, I think it's a little unfair both to the conservative people who are normally portrayed as being more faithful and to liberal people who are assumed to have no faith at all. And so it makes Abigail's struggle, I think, more relatable to more people.
And what kind of response did you get? Where was this performed and what kind of response?
The play was first, I first had a table read in the lab for playwrights at Plan B Theater Company here in Salt Lake. And then Jerry Rapier, the artistic director, approached me about producing it on their season. It was produced in the spring of 2015 at Plan B. The run sold out, which was great. We had some really great reviews. I think the response was very positive. But then again, I don't know. Plan B's audience isn't necessarily, you know, your typical Mormon audience.
Yeah.
It's a more liberal audience.
It's a more liberal audience. Mm-hmm. And so you could say that the play is catered a little more that way. But at the same time, I don't think the play, there is nothing in it that is, I mean, as far as content, it's pretty PG rated. There's nothing in there that's distressing other than the situation.
The premise
is what's difficult and makes people uncomfortable.
Did you get any pushback for even broaching that premise? I mean, from others, maybe they didn't see the play, but...
Not personally. Hmm. I do... I'm sure it's out there, and I probably just haven't interfaced with it personally.
Do you think people walked away from seeing the play feeling, this is going to sound weird, but positive about polygamy or more horrified about polygamy?
Eric Samuelson, who's my my professor and mentor, when he came to see the play, he said it was, he called it a, he said it was basically a very powerful anti-polygamy play. And I think that's probably a fair response. I think the play, I didn't set out to create an anti-polygamy play. I just wanted to put these people in the situation and have them deal with the fallout of what was happening. That's what drama is. I try not to have a very specific message because that tends to get in the way of the storytelling. But I'm not at all surprised if the play is tinged with my personal take on polygamy, which is I have no desire to do it.
So at the end of the play, is it happy, happy polygamous family? Is it marriage falling apart?
I very purposefully left it open-ended. I wanted this to feel like a chapter in their lives, but I did want to give the sense that their lives would continue. I don't think the marriage falls apart, but I think the marriage is definitely, you know, put through its paces.
Much of the angst about polygamy itself in the modern church, aside from past historic practices, centers around the unequal treatment of temple sealings. The fact that men can be, quote, sealed to more than one woman, but women aren't afforded the same possibility. How might feelings about plural marriage change if the sealings kind of cut both ways?
Well, I don't know, because I think culturally we've kind of stepped back. We have a tendency to go, whoa, whenever polygamy even comes up. And I think, I mean, it would be a step towards it being more accepted, I guess, and less of that pushback. But I think it would take us some time because we spent so much time and so much energy saying, separating ourselves, saying we don't do that. That's not us. That's not the image we want to portray, that I actually don't, as much as I imagine polygamy being embraced in the world of the play, I don't know that the church will.
Sure. But so if ceilings, let's say that it was, do you think that would just, as you say, like put a brighter light on the whole polygamy episode and sort of enshrine it even more? I mean, is that the danger, you think?
I don't know, actually, if it would
It certainly would be more equitable,
mm-hmm.
And take care of sort of that issue.
And I think that's the idea of the concept of equity is probably more attractive to people in the modern church, I think, than the idea of bringing polygamy back. There's, I think, just a general sense of things on the other side are going to sort themselves out someday. But I think we on this side of the veil sometimes can't help but think about it a lot and get really caught up in the mess and in the tangle. And I think it would at least help people to understand things better and for it to just sit well. I don't know whether or not it would drive an interest in polygamy returning to practice.
What do you think what would you like to see the church leaders do about polygamy? You said it's like this invisible, unspoken presence in the room. What could they do? I mean, they put out an essay about it, a couple essays, actually. Mm-hmm. But it's still this feeling of unease, I think, about talking about it.
Right. I wonder, well, I can appreciate that the church has been so much more open and they've tried really hard to be transparent about history and especially, you know, throwing light in dark corners and dealing with the things that are more sticky and more complicated. Saints is a great indication of that. And I had the opportunity to help on that project a little.
The new history of the church that's being
of the
produced.
Multi-volume. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Multi-volume history of the church, Saints. I think my understanding is one of the goals of that project is to make some of the more difficult aspects of church history more readily available. and to try to parse some of those difficult questions, because I think sometimes on the far side of sometimes I think people are trying to just pretend that those things didn't happen, and we need to at least I wish that the church would acknowledge, and not only acknowledge, but you know, kind of say, yeah, we did that, and it was hard about so many things. You just kind of wonder, I wonder, you know, why can't we just own the things that we are responsible for? Not just the administration of the church, but I think we as members, our culture sometimes can be really exclusive, and we, you know, decide, you know, what we want to talk about and what we don't want to talk about and what makes people comfortable. And I think sometimes the culture needs to be more accepting of what has happened in the past. And kind of own it and be willing to talk about it and be willing to say, okay, yes, this makes me uncomfortable and these are the reasons why. Sometimes that's the first thing we need in a dialogue, is just the recognition that there is something to talk about. And I think the church is on its way there. I think that they are embracing transparency, and sometimes the culture is a little further behind and needs a minute to catch up.
So part of the persistence of this idea of polygamy is that in one of the church's books of scripture, the Doctrine and Covenants, there is a section, 132, that talks about it and says not only is polygamy okay, it's the highest form of marriage. Would you like to see that section removed or edited or fixed or explained or what?
Oh, goodness. I think it is something that we could do with just, yeah, a really good explanation. I mean, especially considering, you know, if you look at that section of the DNC and say, okay, this is the highest form of marriage, but we don't practice it, but then we do, it just gets confusing, even for someone who has been in the church their whole life. So I think that we deserve just a good conversation about it.
So some people feel like the church should say, and argue that the church should acknowledge or say, at least not acknowledge, but say that past polygamy was a mistake. It was done, but it shouldn't have been done. You've immersed yourself in this thinking at least now about the issue. How do you view it? Do you think it was a mistake? Do you think it was just like you say, a hard task that early church members did, or?
I think it was. I don't know that I feel comfortable saying that it was a mistake. I think that it was, because it's the kind of thing, relationships, I think about on an individual level, and I think that there are individual relationships dealing with polygamy, individual polygamous marriages that worked, and individual polygamous marriages that didn't, and there are going to be, it's like any other form of human relationship, that there are going to be the ones that find a way to build their lives around it, and there are going to be the ones that fail, and I think the mistake for me is the expectation that it's the thing that's going to work for everybody. I feel that about marriage. I feel like marriage between a man and a woman doesn't work for everybody, and that's an unfair expectation. And then also the fact that people will say that there's something wrong with me because I'm not married. That's difficult and common assumption. So I think that there are mistakes that were made in the handling of it. I think Joseph Smith was a prophet, but he was also discovering things. And part of his discovery process was fumbling in the dark. There were things that he was given, revelation that he was just given in bits and pieces, and he was expected to extrapolate something much more complicated. And polygamy under Joseph changed under Brigham, and changed under John Taylor, and changed hugely under Wilford Woodruff. So polygamy has kind of, in the church's history, has had a really interesting and complex evolution. And I don't know if I can say that it was a mistake for polygamy to be practiced, because I mean, I don't know, you could make an argument for that. You could also make an argument for marriage to be a mistake. It's a complicated question. I feel like there were things that the church potentially has mishandled touching on polygamy since the beginning, and even in the choice to walk it back and to wipe polygamy from its practice, just the sudden abrupt break is, there were mistakes there. And so it's hard to just kind of say that it's all one big mistake.
So Melissa, tell us a little bit about the plays. It's been produced and performed, or are there any other prospects for it being able to be seen again? Is anyone looking at it right now?
Not that I know of. It's been published in a book with another play of mine. They're both stories about Latter-day Saint women in difficult and interesting relationships. The book is called Third Wheel, Peculiar Stories of Mormon Women in Love, and it's published by Common Consent Press. And the book is out there. It's out in the world. I occasionally receive emails from people who have read it or interacted with it, and they express to me either their opinions or their interest or their I've had people express gratitude for its existence. It did have a production here in Park City in the fall, in September, and I was able to meet some. I didn't know that they were at the show until afterward, but some polygamists and some children of polygamists who attended the play. And there are, I believe that there is some interest in it in other quarters, and I just hope, you know, it's a play. I hope it gets produced again.
I'm curious because, you know, with what happened in Mexico recently with the killings of the three mothers and the six children, at least what was a polygamous colony, and certainly at least one of the women killed was a polygamist, was a plural wife. If there's interest in it again, you know, and also have you changed the script at all through since it's first performed, given things that developments that happen or your own evolution?
I have made I'm a tweaker. I have made some adjustments, but I wouldn't say that they were huge, and that hasn't necessarily been because of any outside events. I think what happened in Mexico was a terrible tragedy. I don't know that the play is well known enough for people to come knocking down my door because of what happened there. But I'm always hopeful that someone will express some interest in it. I just feel like it's something that we, polygamy has been a formative hand in Mormon just about everything. And so I think we just need to acknowledge that it's been there and that it has changed us.
I got one last question. You mentioned church founder Joseph Smith. Would you like to write a play about him? Do you think you could? Write a play about him?
I think anybody could write a play about Joseph Smith, but I feel that we've had too many plays about Joseph Smith and we've had too many films about Joseph Smith. I think touching, it was a pleasure and it was good for me as both a writer and an amateur historian and as a Mormon to write about Joseph in the background of Jane and Emma. Mm-hmm. And I think as a character, that's the easiest place to put him, because there's so much baggage that comes with him and with Emma as characters that if they're secondary in the story, it's a little easier to handle as a writer because there's just so much going on and you can really pare things down to what is specific to the story you're trying to tell. But I would say that we have so many stories about Joseph and we have so many stories about Brigham, and our culture is, there's so much more going on. We have so many more stories to tell than the stories of these two men who were very important, but they we've heard those stories. We've heard them several times over. And I just feel that there are other stories that could be told where Joseph could make a cameo. Joseph could make an appearance, which he does in Jane and Emma, but it's not about him. It's about what's happened later because of him. And the church has changed so much in the past couple of centuries, and it's grown so much across the face of the world. Our art needs to reflect that.
Mm-hmm. Melissa Lalani Larson, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Peggy, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
And to our producer, Sarah Weber, thank you. We remind our listeners that they can keep up on all the happenings in and about the church by subscribing to our free weekly newsletter. Just go to sltrib.com to sign up, and we'll talk again next week on Mormonland.